New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns, and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
And a very good evening to all of you tuning into Yahoo Sports Radio and the Big E Sports Show, where we always deliver the biggest and the best in sports. And of course, we're powered by our good friends in the Quicken Loan Studios. And up first tonight, we're going to head straight to Edmond, Oklahoma. We're going to catch up with a sports anchor from News Channel 4, KFOR. And that is our good friend, Bob Berry Jr., who I know is trying to muscle through the dog days of summer. How are you doing, Bobby?
Hey, I'm doing good. And seems like we don't have the dog days of summer anymore. When the NBA playoffs go as long as they do, and now we have a big-time golf tournament in our neck of the woods. So, yeah, I'm like, where'd the summer go? It's going to be football season here before we know it.
I know. The countdown is on, and you certainly do have a very big weekend ahead in Edmond, Oklahoma, with the 2014, the U.S. Senior Open at Oak Tree National is serving as this year's host. And I know I've got a ton of family in Oklahoma, and there's been tremendous anticipation for this tournament. Tell me about it.
Well, I'm sure Bernhard Langer, Colin Montgomery, Kenny Perry, and the Oak Tree Gang will be wondering where Elissa is this week.
They'll go,
where's he? Come on, because we know. Hey, we know where your son gets his golf talent. I know that you can hit with the best of them. So, now we're excited because this Oklahoma's always been a really good golf market, and Oak Tree, when it was founded in the mid '70s, was designed by Pete Dye to host majors. They hosted the '84 U.S. Amateur. They hosted the '88 PGA, and then they went into some turmoil with ownership, filed bankruptcy. They were supposed to host the 94 PGA Championship and had to give that up because their club was in chaos, and they gave it up to, ironically, the other majestic course in our state, Southern Hills in Tulsa. And so now Oak Tree's gotten back on stable footing financially. They hosted the 2006 Senior PGA, and now they've got the U.S. Senior Open this week. A lot of excitement locally. Again, because of so many local guys that played at Oklahoma State, like Scott Verplank, Bob Tway, Willie Wood, those guys, and then Dr. Gil Morgan, of course, obviously a favorite around here. So it's exciting to have these guys in town, and the Oklahoma people are responding to it.
Well, Bobby, I know how much you love the game of golf, the sport, and you've played this course many times. Kind of give a descriptor of in terms of the layout of it and just how challenging and impressive it really is.
Well, it's been rebuilt, and that's what the pros, even who live here and play here, talk about, the added undulation to the greens, the swales that they put in around the greens, the extra bunkering. It's always been a tough golf course, but it needed updating like anything else, and they've done that. So they've spent the money to do that, the new ownership group. And Tom Lehman, for example, who's a former major champion, had never played Oak Tree, had never even laid eyes on the grounds, and he came in last Sunday to kind of check it out, and he had raised eyebrows when it was over, going, man, this is going to be tough. And not just that, but you know, listen how the Oklahoma summers can do. And right now, the expected temperatures for this weekend for the final two rounds are in excess of 100 degrees both days, and lots of humidity and some Oklahoma breeze that better happen, or we're going to have a lot of heat-related incidents. So it'll be challenging for these guys 50 and up, but they're ready for it. They seem to think they are. And, you know, Bernhard Langer hasn't met a challenge he hasn't been able to master this summer. He's been brilliant. He's won three tournaments already. He's won a major. He's got $2 million almost in earnings. So guys like this, they tend to play well everywhere. So we're looking forward to a good finish.
The sports anchor from News Channel 4 in Oklahoma City, Bob Berry Jr., joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You rattled off several of the notable players. Do you have a particular favorite who perhaps can win it all?
I'm trying to think of a dark horse. I picked Tom Lehman before it started just because he grinds. He spent his whole life trying, finally started paying off late in his career on the regular PGA Tour. So, like him, Colin Montgomery is playing very well. You know, we got a totally wrong impression, and I'm guilty of it. When Monty played in the United States back on the regular tour, he always would miss the boat, never could win. He had rabbit ears. He'd hear everything the gallery was yelling at him. And turns out he couldn't be more charming. He's enjoying himself on this circuit a lot. He's already got 8 top 10 finishes this year. He won the Senior PGA Championship earlier, so he's won a major. And he said that was his first victory on American soil in 22 years. So he just seems chipper and happy and enjoying himself in life after 50. So he's a guy I think you need to watch.
Well, Monty owns, 31 wins on the European Tour, fourth for most all time, and certainly very, very impressive. Well, let's transition right now. Obviously, it's been a very crazy week in the NBA. So much speculation, rumors, a lot of movement still taking place. Do you ever remember a time in the NBA in the summer that it was the lead story?
Well, I don't, but I mean, I think market has affected that, meaning Oklahoma City, they didn't, you know, right now they'd already be saying, hey, who's going to be the third team tackle for Oklahoma's football team? But now, because of the Thunder, they're all jazzed about, hey, who's going to be the manager? And is Scott Brooks going to have a new agent? I mean, it's unbelievable how the conversation has changed in my market, just about everything Thunder. Everybody wants to know. They hired a new assistant coach the other day who was coaching the NBDL team in Tulsa, and you'd have thought that was like Bob Stoops hiring a new offensive coordinator. So it's kind of interesting how all that has shifted. And yet on draft night, people were around here were going, Mitch McGarry, Josh Huestis, who? And yet McGarry actually played pretty well in the Orlando Summer League this week. And it took like 5 minutes of watching that kid play at 6'11", 270, to realize why he would be a favorite of Sam Presti, the general manager. He just does all that stuff that Thunder guys do. He hustles. He dives for loose balls. He gives max effort all the time, and team guy all the way. So you can kind of see that sort of thing. But, yeah, I'm waiting, like I think a lot of people are, for the big moves at the top, and then maybe when those free agent dominoes start to fall with the superstars, then all this other stuff will fall into play.
With Mitch and Josh, I mean, what's your anticipation in terms of the role that they can play for Oklahoma City?
That's a great question, because I don't think Huestis will do anything this year. He was a name, to be quite honest with you. I went and found my Stanford roster and went, who's this guy? I remember when Stanford eliminated Kansas in the NCAA tournament, and we were all going, wow, they really played good defense as a team that night for Johnny Dawkins. And Huestis was one of the guys that was kind of charged with guarding Andrew Wiggins, who's the top overall pick in the NBA now. We know that. So he's a guy I think they'll have him in Tulsa playing NBDL most of the season until he is ready to go. McGarry, a little bit of a different story, and yet now you've got a lot of big guys on the Thunder roster with Serge Ibaka and Kendrick Perkins and Steven Adams, who played so well last year. Nick Collison is still around. Hashim Thabeet, for the time being, is on the roster. So you're wondering aloud, where is McGarry going to find any time or any minute? So I probably expect him to be in Tulsa as well. So I can't see any mark made. Now, they picked up a guy named Samaje Christian, a rookie point guard from Xavier of Ohio. After the draft was over, Charlotte had actually drafted him, and the Thunder acquired his rights for cash, and he actually played pretty well in Orlando, too, and the team needs a backup point guard or two, because their former backup point guard is now the head coach of the Knicks, Derek Fisher. So Christian has probably impressed me as much as any of these young guys they picked up on draft night.
Well, Josh Huestis, a little did-you-know point. He is from my hometown, Bobby, Great Falls, Montana. I thought that was pretty cool when I was...
Well, there you go. He's destined for stardom, maybe in the media. I know this. He's got model looks, okay? I mean, he appeared at his first news conference. Everybody went, whoa, who's this guy? I mean, you know, he's going to give Russell Westbrook a run for his fashion money, I think, when he appears in Oklahoma City. He's a great-looking kid and was adopted by a family that lived in Montana, mm-hmm. and went to Stanford, and very good team guy. So he's got all the markings for stardom. And now, I mean, if he's from your hometown, I expect great.
Bobby, listen, enjoy the weekend, and we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Thank you, E.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, the Big E Sports Show continues on at Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. We love hearing from you. We want to direct you to Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Well, the big baseball show we have continues on as we gear up for the Major League Baseball, the All-Star Game, the festivities, all the action, all the fun. And right now, we're going to take time to kind of power down a bit. We're going to be a bit reflective and take time for a book review. It's a pleasure to have with us this evening Gary Peterson, who is the staff writer. You can check him out on Twitter as well, at CC Times, the Contra Costa Times. And he is also the author of a new book on the 1989 World Series that was played with the Oakland Athletics and the San Francisco Giants. The book is titled The Earthquake World Series, The Battle of the Bay, Bashing the A's, Thrilling Giants, and the Earthquake World Series. Good evening, Gary. It's nice to have you with us on this Friday night.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, before we take time to turn back the hands of time and relive that earthquake series, because I absolutely remember where I was. I remember it well. What are your thoughts on the A's and the Giants and what you've seen from both of these teams so far in 2014?
Well, I keep telling people that the Giants got off to one of the fastest starts in their San Francisco history. They've kind of tailed off a little bit since then. The A's, I believe, the time I checked out the dust record in baseball, it's all part of my plan that they appeared headed for another possible big World Series. And they remind me, in a general sense, of the 89 teams, that both teams have good, solid ownership. The A's are currently haggling over a team. But if that gets turned out, you're going to have both teams secure in this area. They're not losing money. Good general managers, good field managers. And that hasn't always been the case during the 47 years together in the Bay Area. A lot of times one team's been up, one team down, and about ready to leave town. But both, as in 1989, these teams have, you know, solid chances for making the postseason. And I like what I see from them.
But what has been the key for, specifically like the Giants, you know, you were talking about getting off to the fastest start. What has been the key for them sustaining that early season success so far?
Well, since I left sports a few years ago, I'm more of a casual fan, but from what I read, their offense has kind of gone in the tank lately, and they're looking to score runs, and that's been a problem. That was a problem for them last year as well. And when they've been good, they won World Series after 2010 and 2012 seasons. Their offense was a little bit more consistent than it's been this year.
Okay, Gary Peterson is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio at the Big E Sports Show. We're going to transition right now. We're going to take time to preview his new book that's just been released, The Earthquake World Series, The Battle of the Bay. So take us back to 1989, and what is your recollection of that World Series and how Mother Nature really disrupted an incredible series?
Yeah, that's my recollection, that Mother Nature stepped in and kind of rewrote the script. It was right before Game 3 in San Francisco. The first two games, the A's had won in Oakland, and it hadn't been very competitive at all. The A's were a great team at that point, and they were at the top of their game. The Giants were a pretty good team. They were kind of nicked up, and their pitching was in a bit of disarray. So Game 3 was either going to be the Giants were going to make it a World Series, or the A's were going to win and have an insurmountable lead. But we never got to that point that day. It was like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes before the first pitch, and then I was sitting in my assigned seat in the overflow press box in Section 1, upper deck, and it started bouncing pretty good. And, you do the research on the book, and I find out that it's estimated like 15 or 20 seconds. It seemed a lot longer than that, bouncing up and down. So that forever changed that World Series and how that World Series is remembered.
I know in the book that Tony La Russa, he wrote the foreword, and I thought he really summarized it best, just talking about the timing of it, just how destructive the effects were, and it really was just so overwhelming, and the fact that it was, you know, happened with two teams from the same geographic area that were, you know, playing to win the World Series. What were some of the things that took place there?
Well, he's right. It was really a convergence of, like, once-in-a-lifetime experiences, because the A's and Giants have been cohabitating the Bay Area here for 47 years, and only once have they met in the World Series, and that was 1989. The Loma Prieta earthquake happens like with the players on the field warming up, the fans in the stands, and it's the largest earthquake to hit San Francisco or the Bay Area since the 1906 earthquake. And so it was almost like a surreal experience. Mm-hmm. Thinking, you know, first of all, the two teams are playing in the World Series, and now here comes the earthquake, and it sure takes you away from what you thought was going to happen. And once everyone understood the magnitude of it, then the real big discussion became, you know, when do we resume or do we resume the World Series? And there was a lot of conversation after that. I mean, I've never been through tornadoes or hurricanes, but some things you can see coming. You don't see an earthquake coming, and it is so stunning and so jarring that it almost feels like nothing's ever going to be the same again. So there was... The big conversation was, you know, how does baseball fit in, you know, as the Bay Area tries to recover and move forward from the earthquake.
The author of The Battle of the Bay, Gary Peterson, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and you're exactly right. It resulted in a 10-day disruption in play, unprecedented stoppage. My question to you is, how did they maintain the demands in terms of with their conditioning, with their mental focus, with having such a significant time off?
That was a huge challenge. The uncertainty of it was one thing. Number two, they live in, you know, for at least 6 or 7 months out of the year, they live in San Francisco and Oakland and the Bay Area, so they're citizens here as well. And like everyone, you want to be deferential toward people who had lost loved ones or property or who were having a hard time. And the World Series really didn't fit into that equation. They had to take time off. And when I talked to Will Clark last year about it, he said the tough thing was, he said, you're used to showing up at spring training, having not swung a bat in a while, and your first challenge is just to put the bat on the ball. And he goes, and now here we are in the middle of a World Series trying to do the same thing. So the earthquake hits, and there's, you know, when are they going to start again? First it was going to be 7 days, and then it was going to be 10 days, and then it started to rain. And so it was difficult. I mean, they could go to the, into the batting cages and get some work in, but, and there were players who flat out said, you know, I don't care if we resume the World Series or not. Carney Lansford was a Bay Area native, and he was the third baseman for the A's, and he said, you know, when we start again, I don't want any of my friends or family at Candlestick Park.
Wow.
So it was a huge challenge, and you're right, it was both physical in terms of trying to keep sharp and mental in terms of trying to maintain your focus. And for a lot of these guys, this is a crowning achievement, playing in the World Series, and they didn't feel like they could feel good about that anymore, and that was kind of a dilemma as well. The A's finally went down to Phoenix to their spring training base for 2 days of workouts, and then were met there by adoring fans in Phoenix. They filled the little Phoenix Municipal Stadium and cheered the A's like they were rock stars, and I think that was a big key for them. I mean, there's no manual on how to handle yourself in a situation like that, but they went down to Phoenix and really got recharged, and it was okay for them to feel good about baseball again. And they came back, and they just walloped the Giants in Game 3. Now, the Giants had stayed home and worked out of an empty Candlestick Park in front of 60,000 empty seats. But to this day, you talk to the players and the managers and the people involved, and they'll say that was a huge challenge. You didn't know what to do.
Author Gary Peterson has been joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of the book. It is titled Battle of the Bay, Bashing A's, Thrilling Giants, and the Earthquake World Series. And it's been such an honor to have you with us this evening, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thank you, Gary.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead at YSR. Okay, back with you at YSR and YahooSportsRadio.com as we are coming to you from inside the Quicken Loan Studios. And it is time now for our weekly Under the Helmet segment with the great Jason Peter. And Jason, let's begin this week's conversation with zeroing in on the Cleveland Browns and their troubled wide receiver who was arrested last weekend with the DWI. Of course, we're talking about Josh Gordon. Jason, it's good to have you with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Jay, so what was your reaction when you heard the news? Another young man with immense talent, clearly struggling with substance abuse, and he's also had some other run-ins with the law, but what was your reaction when you heard the news about Josh?
I'm not shocked anymore. You know, I mean, you kind of, especially with guys that have a history, you know, it is difficult. If you go into the NFL already with issues, with problems, then that lifestyle, all it does is magnify it. Now, you know, like for myself, I mean, you know, I've been open with my issues that I had, and I didn't have any of that stuff going into the NFL. That was all kind of created once I got into that lifestyle, combined with, you know, the physical pain and the money and everything else. But, you know, here, Josh Gordon is somebody who, you know, there were issues way back. Teams knew that he was a high-risk sort of player. And, you know, Cleveland, obviously, you know, were able to have success with him. But you kind of had a few hiccups as well along the way. Well, now, you know, you're dealing with something that is kind of removed out of the team's hands. And ultimately, you know, you could lose the guy for the year.
Well, Jason, now the Browns, wouldn't you agree? I mean, they have a responsibility to help out this young man. Because when you are drafted, I'd love to get your perspective on this. I mean, you're part of a family. I mean, they don't just, you know, shouldn't just cut ties with him, right?
Yeah, you know, I would love to have that feeling about all NFL teams, but it's just not the case. You know, there's a handful of teams that strive for that family sort of mentality, that atmosphere. But, you know, there's I would say the majority of teams, it's strictly business-like. And, you know, we're paying you millions of dollars. You need to show up and you take care of your business and you don't get in trouble. And you know, you do everything that we would expect you to do. And if you get in trouble, you know, usually they'll depending on the severity of it, it might be a slap on the wrist here and there. But obviously with Josh Gordon, it's, you know, multiple issues, multiple, you know, arrests, So I don't know what Cleveland does here. You know, it'll be interesting to see. Certainly is a talented player. And, you know, every franchise is looking for guys who ultimately end up in Hawaii. You know, guys on the All-Pro team, Pro Bowl sort of players. And here they have one, and now it's kind of you have to weigh, obviously, the issues and the PR that is now going to come with Josh Gordon, you know, and really the Browns are kind of on the clock, so to speak, because like you said, there are a lot of people that want to know what they're going to do. Are they going to support this kid? Are they going to help him get the treatment that he needs? Or, you know, are they just going to kind of cut ties? Because you're going to have fans on both sides of the fence. Mm-hmm. You're going to have fans that are like, you know, forget this guy. You know, he's more of a headache than he is somebody who you know, is successful. And especially you're talking about Cleveland. I mean, you're not talking about Super Bowl winning franchise, at least, you know, recently. You know, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, especially with the staff that they got there now and what happened.
Well, he's a repeat offender, and as you had just mentioned, I mean, he's had several other run-ins with the law, and he is a high-risk kind of a player, but the fact is that he's only 23. He really does have such a bright future, and if he doesn't make a hard right turn and a U-turn in his life, he's going to just, his NFL career, it's really going to be over. To me, this is not about football anymore. This is really about, this young man's got to get some mentorship, and he's got to get his life together.
Yeah, you know, you said it perfectly. I mean, it's not about football. You know, everybody knows kind of what he can do on the field, but it's ultimately a decision he's got to make. You know, nobody else can make that decision for you. He's got to want to do it, and up to this point, he has shown everybody that he really doesn't want to be, I guess, you know, the model citizen or you know, however somebody, I guess, describes somebody who's you know, not on drugs or not drinking, you know, obsessively. You know, but it doesn't matter if they send him the treatment or not for, you know, 3 months or a month or a year. Ultimately, it's going to come down to Josh Gordon.
You know, Jason, let me jump in here. I mean, you were a first-round draft pick back in 96, drafted by the Carolina Panthers. I mean, what kind of resources are out there for, you know, players that are struggling with substance abuse? I mean, who might, in your estimation, who might be some of those mentors out there that could really, you know, reach out to Josh and to help him out? Do you have any idea on that?
I think there's a lot of guys that have gone through this stuff. I mean, certainly there's been a handful that have been vocal and have gone public, you know, with their issues that they had either while playing or post-career, or even guys that, you know, were using when they were playing. But then, you know, I think a society still in the NFL that's kind of the thing that you don't want, you know, attached to your name. And especially while you're playing, I don't know if there's somebody, you know, off the top of my head who has, you know, had similar sort of problems and, you know, is still playing and was able to turn his life around. I mean, certainly, you know, Michael Irvin obviously is somebody who has had a lot of problems.
Chris Carter.
Chris Carter is somebody as well. But, you know, you just don't know. You don't know how guys will respond to that. You know, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, ultimately the league has to make a ruling. But yeah, I mean, certainly a guy like that, you know, if a player like a Michael Irvin or Chris Carter, you know, reached out to you, then you know, obviously you're going to answer that call. At least if I was in his shoes, I would. You know, because he's at a crossroads right now,
he
and he's going to have to make that decision.
Jason Peter is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break and be rejoined with the Double Nickel. The great Jason Peter is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We love hearing from you. Joining us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And so, Jason, I know that on many different levels you can identify with perhaps some of the struggles that Josh Gordon has gone through. You've been there yourself, have overcome addiction, in fact, recounted your life story in your New York Times bestseller, Hero of the Underground, about, what, 5-6 years ago. So what kind of advice would you, you give to Josh? I mean, how do you pull yourself, get to the end of yourself to pull yourself up out of that rock bottom and that pit that he is in right now?
Yeah, like I said, he's got to wake up and he's got to say that I want to continue to play football, and this is what I have to do in order to do that. Now, I don't know the extent of everything Josh Gordon is putting into his body. If it's alcohol and marijuana, I don't know if it goes beyond that. Let's just say it's marijuana. Well, there are a lot of people that say that's just a decision he has to make. There's not going to be a major, withdrawal coming off of that physically. He's not going to have, he's not going to be curled up in the corner of his bedroom for 3 weeks, trying to kick that habit. But he's going to have to face, the little voice in his head saying, come on, man, just one time. Just let's light up one time. Or, certainly drinking is different. That's something that has to be monitored coming off. But he needs professional help. The Michael Irvins, the Chris Carters, that's great and all. That's fine and dandy. And, they kind of be your cheerleader there or give you some of their life experiences, but he needs somebody who can figure out why he's doing it. If there is some sort of issue, deep-seated issue that maybe is unresolved, somebody who can just look at him as just another patient and, dissect kind of the way that he's lived his life and how he's gotten to this point. And but it's a group effort for him. It's not, although it is just about him, it's going to take kind of the people around you, the family that we talked
mm-hmm.
about,
support
whether
system,
it's the Browns,
mm-hmm.
the teammates, his immediate family. You got to have a good core group of people around you, because there's, at least with myself, ultimately I had to make the decision to get off of drugs, but I couldn't have done it without the immediate family and the people that were surrounded me.
Hey, we are so glad you're joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. Love hearing from you at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Each and every week on our program, we go one-on-one with the great Jason Peter, of course, played in the NFL and at the University of Nebraska. And I guess, Jason, for many of us, it is difficult to understand when an athlete has such incredible success. You yourself, you had an outstanding career at Nebraska, and of course, in the NFL, you're living the dream. You've got money, fame, glory. And, in your journey, you almost lost your life to drugs. How did your life get out? How do you get off track like that and lose perspective of what's important?
Yeah, everybody's different. But for me, it was a combination of this physical pain that I was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I went into the NFL and had never had to go under, the surgical knife once. My entire athletic career, and then all of a sudden, I was having two major surgeries every year, and part of that recovery is, the pain pills, and you even go back before that is you get down there as a rookie, and for me it was 5-6 games into the season where them, my shoulders were basically, I'd torn rotator cuffs and labrums and everything else. And shoulders, you know, are popping out of the socket, and you know, you're not going to be that first round guy. At least in my mind, I'm not going to be that first round guy who comes in and plays, you know, five games, and then he's on the shelf for, you know, the remainder of the season. So you do what you need to do in order to get by. You know, there's a tough guy mentality in NFL locker rooms. And especially when you're a young guy and trying to prove to the coaches that you're worthy of playing time, or you're worthy of being a starter, you're worthy of being that first-round draft pick, you do whatever you need to do. And that's what I did. I mean, that's when, you know, the pill abuse started, because it became something where, you know, it was taking two pills after a game for recovery, to then, you know, taking two pills to practice, and two pills so that you could sleep at night, and then, you know, two pills to get you going in the morning. I mean, it's just a real slippery slope, at least it was for me. And then when you combine that with having money and living on my own, you know, born and raised in New Jersey, and all of my family and everybody was up there, and mm-hmm. certainly, you know, people came down to see me, but I was living on my own, and also, you know, there was part where it was like, okay, I worked so hard in college, and I got to this point, and now I'm in the NFL, and you know, I'm getting invited to all these, you know, VIP sort of parties and everything, and you jump at that opportunity, you know, as a young kid. And I know for me, I feel like I was raised in a pretty good environment, you know, with my family, and you know, we weren't perfect by any means. I think every family has some issues, but, you know, it was the so-called, you know, white picket fence sort of deal. You know, my mom and dad are still married, had brothers, sister. You know, I never starved for anything, or never didn't have a pair of shoes or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And they taught me the difference between right and wrong, and still, you know, it kind of, I ventured down this path, you know, and I walked that line long enough until eventually I just kind of fell off. But you could imagine when kids are faced with that and don't have that type of support that I had, it's something that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
You know, and I remember when I went through your book several years ago, I remember the one thing that your father said to you, just in real, just, you know, just desperation. He just said to you, "Why can't you just stop?" I mean, because it escalated and it just got so bad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my father was an immigrant, you know, from Germany. He came over here with, you know, when he was 25 years old, and it was a different world, obviously, that he was raised in, as opposed to what I, what he was raising me in. And, you know, things maybe in his eyes were more black and white, and you know, there wasn't as much, I think, color as we see now, but ultimately, I think for so long I was trying to live in that world of color, where, you know, it's not necessarily black and white, and there's a lot of gray areas and this and that, but ultimately, at the end of the day, that kind of black and white thinking was a big part of why I ultimately stopped, because it was a black and white question. Why can't you just stop? You know, I just kind of thought about that, and it's just like, that's what it comes down to. It just comes down to me wanting to make that decision to get off of drugs. And, you know, no matter, you know, how much help you get, or you know, how long you're in a treatment center, and certainly, you know, for some people they need, you know, more help than others. But at the end of the day, eventually you're not going to live in a treatment center for the rest of your life, or you're not going to have, you know, 24-hour, help around the clock trying to keep you off of drugs, eventually you're going to be on your own and you're going to have to make that decision. And that's just kind of the way that I looked at it was, I'm the one who got myself into this problem, this predicament. I'm the one who's going to have to get myself out. So,
Jason, when you were in the NFL, though, who did you surround yourself with? I mean, how important is it, choosing your traveling companions wisely? I mean, obviously, the Cleveland Browns are telling Johnny Manziel you need to tone it down in many different ways, many different levels. He certainly needs to be perhaps a little bit more selective with who he's surrounding himself with. So he doesn't end up like...
I couldn't even imagine nowadays, because everybody is accessible. You know, I mean, I would like to think that if I was playing, and I think back to when we were here at Nebraska in the NFL, we didn't want anybody to know what we were doing. I think that was the difference. Like, we didn't want, to tell everybody that we were at, this party or this nightclub or this is where we're going to be, because we kind of liked our privacy. And now it's a different game. Everybody's on Twitter and social media and communicating with fans and answering your critics and this and that. And I would have been really bad, I think, if Twitter was around back then.
Oh, my. Uh-huh.
Because I just, for as much as I didn't like to publicize what we were doing, I also didn't like to hear, people critiquing me as well, because I was always kind of one of those, well, you never had a jock strap on in your life, so who are you to critique me?
You'd be firing it off, huh?
Yeah, it just would not have went over very well, but fortunately, it wasn't around back then.
We always love talking with Jason Peter each and every week at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And Jason, next week, we will definitely get into the NFL discussion deal that gets the okay from the judge. So we definitely want to get your insight on that as well. Okay, Jason, thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.